For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Investors, welcome to Wednesday's October 16th edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Chris Dierskalis and Dennis Dick. On today's show, market clears resistant but cannot close above. We got some good earnings from Bank of America. Left goes bullish on Bausch Healthcare. Apple finds a seller at 238. Cloud stocks looking murky after the news on Workday. Possible opioid settlement going to help some of the drug stocks. We're going to take a look at the brokerage also after that big move yesterday in Charles Schwab. Today's show is sponsored by Webull and their trader competition. Join traders around the world in a paper trading competition that's great for you and somebody else. Competition consists of four weekly competitions, October 7th through 9th, with weekly prizes of nearly $11,000 worth of Amazon gift cards and a grand prize to the best overall portfolio of either a brand new Tesla 3 or 40 grand toward paying off your students' loans. Plus, we will donate a portion of the total returns to Shriners Hospital for Children's Research. To learn more, go to the Webull mobile app or click on this link in the chat. Also, folks, in the Chicago area or near the Chicago area, next week there's going to be the Benzinga Cannabis Conference. I'm going to drop the link here in the chat. Use the code BZFAN if you want to sign up to that. I think I just saw that Jim Belushi is going to be there, and plus Jason Raznick and the rest of the Benzinga crew. So we got all that stuff out of the way. Let's do the S&P 500. Cleared resistance yesterday. That resistance kind of holding. We settled at 97.75. But that turns out to be the high of the pre-market session. That's our key to much higher prices today. You have crude in the green by 28 cents at 53.09. Gold up $1.40 at 14.84.40. Silver going the opposite way, down 13.9 cents at 17.24.5. And Bitcoin down $120 at 8,050, just clinging to that $8,000 level. So Triple D, we do have some earnings, but I guess the big news of the day would be Workday.
Yeah, I think the cloud stocks. And you know what? I'm disappointed in your pun off the hop, Joel. You didn't use the pun here. You said the cloud stocks look murky. I thought for sure with the softball they were throwing up the middle, you'd say the cloud stocks are looking cloudy.
No, murky is, well, you use puns. Okay, let me.
I have Joel's all over this pun. The cloud stocks look cloudy. Cloudy.
That's no good. There's no creativity in there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of creativity. We're playing on the cloud. Anyway, so they do look cloudy here this morning. Workday's Investors Day. Joel, tell us what happened here. It's down 5.5%, down almost 10 points here now. Give us the reasoning here. WDAY is taking the beats.
They had Analyst Day on Tuesday, and Bernstein said the company's focus on innovation and R&D spending is a long-term positive, but could pressure margins near term. So other firms lowered their target as well. The stock, this is going to be a tough one for investors because, you know, a classic stock, big rally, you had your pullback, and then everyone was jumping in the pool as of yesterday. The rebound was on their way. And now where was the low of the move here? Well, we still got some room to the low of the move here, Dennis. pre-market low 170.02. How's it looking out there for that stock and some other cloud stocks?
I mean, there's other news in the sector too here. One concern is that we've had a significant rally and they were starting to show a little bit of life, and this is going to obviously put them right back down in the gutter. Multiple downgrades in the sector, as well as Spinner is pointing out. We got Morgan Stanley downgrading NOW, and we also have Citigroup downgrading Adobe. So you have a lot of kind of bad news here in the sector. When you're looking Workday with saying the margins issue there, Adobe with the downgrade, and NOW with the downgrade. I got to think that's going to bring down the rest of the stocks in the sector. I did put on some cloud shorts last night with Workday getting hit here, so I won't talk about all these stocks, but I don't have Adobe or now, so I can freely talk about those. ADBE trading down 7 points here in the pre-market. I actually did have it overnight. I've already covered it. I covered it before the show started, probably because I wanted to talk about it. NOW down 3% here in the pre-market. It's down 8 points as well. So you look at these charts and you think, well, yeah, they were starting to look like they wanted to break out here, and now they look like that breakout could become a fake out because of fundamental news.
Yeah, let's Workday. Let's first go. I gave you that pre-market low. You have one, yeah, two lows at the 170 area, $2 off that pre-market low. So let's see what I'll give 169 to 170. We'll see what happens there. That's the trap door. That will take you down probably to the $164 area, but see if that pre-market low can hold. Also, and we go back and forth on this. If you were caught short this thing, you know, off the bottom here, this is a pretty nice windfall. I don't think you'd be selling more into the short and thinking, hey, here I am, you know, getting, $9 back here real quickly. So I don't know what the short interest is, and I know a lot of people don't play the short side of the market, but that's one consideration to keep. $2 off or $1.85 off that pre-market low. NOW that got downgraded, that's down $8 as well. That is not heavily traded.
It trades, though, and it moves. So this stock is a little bit of a wild child. But again, we were in consolidation station there for a bit, looking like we wanted to break out just as of yesterday. I mean, a lot of stocks look like they want to break out if they didn't break out yesterday, because it was a great day for the market overall. But it brings us right back down to this range again. I mean, I think you find support down there where you were 4 days ago, down the 258, 259 area.
Yeah.
But it's tricky because these stocks really have kind of been out of favor for a while, and I just think this maybe puts them back out of favor. Or do they buy the dip?
I don't, man.
Maybe they buy the dip. I mean, UNH, you did see the buy the dippers coming in, completely different sector. Ooh. But UNH, well, I guess UNH never dipped. It was trading up, but they ripped it then. But the banks, I mean, they really bought the dips in the banks. Goldman was down at one point in time over $5, end up closing in the green there. We know Wells Fargo and Citigroup actually were down as well, and both of them closed in the green, and JP Morgan closed strong as well. So you saw a lot of strength there. We're going to talk to bank earnings in a second. I'm just wondering, is the buy the dip mentality across the market right now? So does that mean they come in and buy the dips on the cloud stocks, or is it selective? That's what I'm asking.
I would just, for just a general rule of thumb here, I would look at when you're looking at all these stocks, whether it's Twilio, let's see what the Twilio chart looks like here. Boom, boom. Same thing, you know, coming off the low, looking like you're okay. I've just figured that 50% retracement, see if you have one or two same lows in that area. Then if it holds, I think it will be a buy the dip. If they can't, you know, hold those pre-market lows around the 50%, of the entire move, then just look for the lows of the move here. But it's a little bit different. They bought, you know, there were bank earnings yesterday and they were buying the banks. Goldman, they didn't love the report, but the other, you know, this thing is more like old, you know, the entire sector wide, right?
There's a lot of negative news here.
All right.
So, three different pieces with two downgrades in the sector on the same day. And obviously the margin issue there with Workday. So, I'm not coming in and buying the dip. I might be covering some shorts on some of the stocks I do have in the sector, but I'm not going long on any of these stocks. At least, you know, I just don't have the guts. Maybe it's the mentality. Maybe you just got to come in and start buying dips on everything because this market seems to be ripping. And let's go to the overall market because it's been an impressive couple of days. I mean, yeah, we were quiet there for one day in there, but really we look at this a week ago and everybody's worried, oh, we're in trouble here again. And the market just turns around and rallies, you know, 100 S&P points. in your face.
Yep, and we did clear resistance. And a lot of times, you know, when we talk about the charts here, we're going to take a look at the spider, the S&P. You had all those highs like 29, 94, 95. Now, you cleared it yesterday. You snuck into the 3,000 handle, 3003 and a quarter was the high. But you closed above it here, but you're trading below it. So I don't know what the news you know, overall, the take is down, but really important. If you go green on this session here, I think you got a good shot. Take out yesterday's high, and then you don't have really much in the 3,000 handle. But let's move over. We do have some earnings to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
That the bank earnings continue to impress here. Bank America has a EPS beat of a nickel, 56 versus 51. Rev sales beat 22. Just a slight beat, 22.8 billion versus 22.79 billion. They're trading high. I'll tell you right now, these branches are ghost towns. They are absolutely ghost towns. The one by my house, I had to go in and get some large bills for tips and stuff. They had one teller. The drive-up window was closed, and I think they had
like, that's a good thing, though, isn't it? Because so many people are doing online banking. I mean, you don't need as much physical. You know, their labor costs can go down. I mean, a lot of stuff is just done online now.
Yep, it is. I don't know how much of a drag the real estate will be on them, because that on one of the locations they built a brand new building, a good area. They probably paid cash for it, but cutting expenses. Look at price action in Bank America. This is a big move on top of yesterday's move.
Huge move yesterday. Took out all that 30 resistance we talked about too, like a hot knife through butter. Really, I mean, if you're gonna look even at the intraday chart. We ripped up there right to 30. We paused there for a second and had the whole tractor beam thing, which I talk about. You can see the big pop up from 30 to 30.24 because it probably took it out very quickly there. And then, you know, obviously came back down, closed below it. But now we get back above it here again. I guess yesterday's high. You know, what's it do there?
30.52 is your pre-market high. You backed off 17 cents since then.
31. 31's huge because that's the highs in July.
Yeah, I don't think we got the gas to get there today. You never know.
You got earnings, and these things can rip. I probably, if I was long it, I would probably be selling it if it got up near 31. But this market, too, it's tricky market. It's got the buy the dip mentality going, and we're ripping. I mean, I feel like the market overall is setting up to go higher. Like, I mean, to break out of this range, because we have been in this S&P range here for the better part. If we're just looking, you know, even recently, we've been in range bound here for the better part of this year. I mean, we keep finding resistance up at 302 on the SPY. I feel like we keep bumping our head up against it enough, we're eventually going to take it out. But resistance is resistance until it's broken.
Yeah, and you meant pre-market high 30.52. You might get if you're hesitant about, you know, buying a gap here, you might get a chance here. 30.24. That was your high from yesterday. You're only 10 cents away from that. Yesterday's close real down at 29.73. A lot of volume trading here in Bank America. JV Spec has an order in, 530,000 at 31.
That's what he sees in the book.
Yeah.
I was just going to look at the book, but he beat me to it. So, I mean, that backs up that level that we're seeing on
these
charts as well. Big seller up, big institutional seller up at 31. So does it stall out ahead of that potentially? So I'd just be cautious I wouldn't be going and buying at 39. It could turn around in a hurry. Again, if it sits up there for long enough, eventually they do usually take it out. But if it just has a quick spike or opens up there, sometimes it can fall off too. So we'll have to see what it does at 31 if it gets up there.
And there was a little rumor yesterday, of course, an unsubstantiated rumor that Bank America, Warren was looking to go be a 10% owner of Bank America. And I was just thinking, what a great day to float a rumor out like that.
Well, he already owns a lot of Bank America.
He owns a lot, but he was getting permission to take up to a 10% stake. And I'm like, what?
I don't know how big his stake is, but it's already significant. So depends, yeah. I guess. I'm not sure how big Warren's stake is.
Do you remember when he took his original stake? Where exactly Warren Buffett was at?
No.
Yeah.
Was it during the financial crisis?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
He was
it with preferred stock too, wasn't
it? It was in his bathtub. Remember that?
Yeah, and he ended up thinking, yeah, he was. Was it Goldman or Bank America?
The bathtub was Bank America.
It was Bank America. And then he loaned the money on a preferred at like 7 or 8% and it had a convertible option. They converted all that, obviously, when they came out of the financial crisis. It was a bold bet, though, because we were in real trouble there. I mean, we had saw a lot of banks fail. So, and, you know, obviously I'm talking about, you know, Lehman Brothers going down to Bear Stearns being bailed out. And, you know, a lot of other, you know, if we saw Fannie, Freddie, AIG was in trouble. Citigroup was in trouble. I mean, it was a bold bet. It worked and paid off for him. I just wonder risk reward was really there for him to make that bet. Because we saw so many, obviously it worked out, but we saw so many banks going belly up. I mean, it was the vote of confidence that the market needed. It really helped the overall market when Warren came and put his money where his mouth is. So maybe he just wanted to help the overall market too, give it a vote of confidence. But when he made that bet and only going to get paid 7 or 8% or whatever it was on Bank America, it was a bold bet because they could have went under. A lot of banks were going to be out.
Yeah, especially them taking out that Countrywide credit. Remember them? There was so many.
Yeah, well, when they were forcing, you know, obviously, you know, they were trying to figure out what to do. And Bear Stearns, they basically forced J.P. Morgan into, was it buying Bear? I believe it was Bear Stearns. And then who else? Oh, no, it was Merrill. It was when Merrill was getting scooped up by Bank America.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one that was kind of forced, too. There was problems. I mean, if you are new to the markets and, you know, that was such an experience for me. I mean, as a trader, I mean, those were my best trading years because obviously, you know, we traded inefficiencies and there was so many inefficiencies back then during those 2007, 2008. I don't think I'll ever make as much money as I did in those years. And, you know, that's not, you know, saying I was making on the short side, I was making on both sides because some of my best long-term investments, I bought some stuff during that financial crisis. And that's the stuff that, you know, really made my long-term portfolio, you know, picking up, you know, some of these stocks when they were in the gutter. And obviously, you know, a lot of stocks were looking like they were potentially, you know, going to go bankrupt. But, you know, we were nibbling. And I wish I would have obviously put serious money, but I put some money to work. And that money that I put to work really, you know, made. So anybody who bought during that financial crisis, 2007, 2008, 2009, was seriously rewarded, you know, especially if they've held up to this point in time.
That was the dip to buy. I don't know.
Never going to get a dip better. Like, I mean, but it was a lot of worries. I mean, I was looking at any company with debt. And you were looking and thinking, holy, you know, like this is serious. Like we're losing some serious companies. If we lose the financial system, what does that mean? I mean, we've never seen that really happen. Not in the U.S., not, in, you know, and obviously in the last 100 years where you start seeing that many banks going belly up. I mean, you got to go back to the Great Depression. It was a mess. It was a mess. So, you know, so hindsight's 20/20. Obviously, Warren Betts paid off for him. On Bank America, obviously the bets that I made, the smaller bets, paid off for me too on the long side. But it was, you know, a market that when we've never—if you've never experienced volatility, like people thinking, "Oh, last year was so volatile. How can this happen?" Let's put this in perspective. During the financial crisis, the VIX got to almost 90. So we're saying, what volatility when the VIX is at 20 or 30? It got to almost 90. That's volatility.
That's for sure. Other earnings to just talk about here after the close. Interactive Brokers had a Q3 miss. They missed by 7 cents. Estimates were at 52 cents. They came in at 45 cents. Revenues came up shy too here. 492 was the estimate. They came in at 466. That's after Chuck Schwab had a good earnings yesterday. Have Interactive Brokers trading in the red here by 43 cents. Big bar after the announcement. I'll tell you, if they get this back down under 46 here, the low of the move, 45 and a quarter, yeah, and then surrounded by 45, 40, 45, 60. I'll take a look at it. I'll take a look at it from the long side, perhaps leaning on those August lows, but Interactive Brokers going the opposite way of Chuck Schwab yesterday.
I'm not buying any of the retail brokers. I know that they've come back a long ways here. I've said publicly that I like E-Trade for a short here right now. It's up about 50 cents from what I started talking about that a few days ago here. It's the rising tide lifts all ships, though, in my opinion. The S&Ps have been ripping here, ripped yesterday. And, I mean, did E-Trade really have a fantastic day? There were some stocks up 4, 5, 6%. E-Trade was up 1%. So, you know, really relative performance. It wasn't that great for E-Trade yesterday. You know, if it got up to 42, I think it's even a better short because there's a gap it's still trying to fill here. And that's the kind of the concern. So if you're shorting here, you might be a little bit early. I just think there's so many unknowns. I mean, you're going to bring this back to almost the price where it was when they had commissions and now they don't. Doesn't make any sense to me at all. Ameritrade hasn't come nearly back as far. I mean, we're $45. And, you know, we're down here at 36. So I don't know why E-Trade came back so much. Interactive Brokers never sold off quite as much either there. But I just can't bring myself to own any of these retail stocks with so many unknowns about their potential revenue, obviously lost from these commissions.
United Airlines also reported here. Delta kicked things off with not such a good report. United Airlines here, they came in with a Q3 beat, estimates at 395. They came in at 407, but it was a mixed report as they missed on revenues. The street at 11.41 billion. Sales came in at 11.38 billion. They did raise guidance. Now, I know this thing is kind of thin and all over the place. Someone got real excited, took it up to 90.97. Nothing here, nothing on the dailies there. You've backed off, Dennis. What kind of liquidity are you seeing in UAL?
I mean, it's fairly active market here right now, and it was active last night too, 89.55. Let's see what happens at 90. I mean, it's a big whole psychological number. You topped out there a couple of times. Can it stall out there again? I mean, I look at this chart and I think, do I want to buy it here? It was $82 2 weeks ago. Now you can buy it at 90. I think if you're buying it now, you're doing it backwards. So I'd be more profit taking here. If I'd bought that dip, I'd probably be scooping and doing the profit taking. I mean, these things can keep ripping on earnings. And, you know, obviously, you know, I've always been a one that's probably sells too early. And I could tell you about some pot stock trades that I had yesterday if you want to know about selling too early. But but so it can keep ripping. So that's why I wouldn't initiate it short at 90. But if I was long, I look at those couple highs, I think why not lighten up into this rally?
90.18 was your October 1st high. And on 9/27, you had a 90.30 high. You're within range there, even though the pre-market high is higher. Dennis, do you want to talk about any of those pot trades from yesterday?
Yeah, you know what? We had Afria ripping, and hold what's going on in the market. The market's ripping right now, tier two guys.
Dennis, you're starting to be like me here. We moved.
We're green. We've been red all morning.
Yeah.
Okay. We have some movement here going on right now.
We got a little rally going. Brentster will he'll track it down for us. We do have a rally. We don't. Really, this is really not a time for a number, right? 822.36.
I don't know. Somebody just said something. Obviously, we're live on the show here. So, news desk. Brent's in a news desk. We've got some movement.
Brent is looking.
Movement. Back to the green. Buy the dip. Buy the dip.
I do this.
The dip bar is already bought.
I do this to him all day. Do we have to do it to him during the pre-market press?
Yes, we do.
Okay. All right. Dennis says we do. Trying to go unchanged here. I like that 97.75 here so we can go green in the S&Ps. Do you care about J.B. Hunt earnings or not?
No, there's so much more stuff to talk about here. Okay. And so here's where we're going. We've got to talk about this potential opioid settlement. I want to talk a little bit about some pot stock trades, but we can do that after. Let's go to this is the big news of the day. I mean, we're 20 minutes in and we haven't even talked about it yet. Oh, the opioid, that's a funny word to say, settlement, $18 billion potential settlement on the table reported by the Wall Street Journal last night. You were seeing all these stocks rip on this potential settlement. Cardinal Health, and it's still just rumors. I don't think we have an actual settlement here, but I know it was saying in the article that Johnson & Johnson might kick in as much as $4 billion towards this, so they're trying to do this or trying to get this settled. So if you look in the big three, MCK, McKesson, up $9 on this. ABC, up 7% on this. CAH, I own CAH in the long-term portfolio, almost thinking about lightening it up into this, up 6% on this. Johnson & Johnson is up a couple of bucks on this. We also saw some of the drug stocks catch, or the retailers catching a bit of a bid last night. WBA, CVS, and RAD were all trading up slightly on this. They're not going to get the kind of moves that obviously Cardinal and McKesson and ABC are getting because those are direct plays off of this. But we're seeing big pops in all these stocks. All these stocks have been in the gutter for a long time. I just think it's such a rip on stocks that are pretty, you know, conservative. These stocks don't move that much. So that's what makes me think, like, I think it's a selling opportunity. I mean, look at McKesson, for instance. MCK. Look at all the highs up here, 148, 149, 150. Yes, this could be a big, you know, deal that they, you know, get this, you know, potential litigation off the table. But again, these stocks have been in the gutter. You have all these highs, and you're going to open it right up, and all that resistance on 150. I like it as a sale.
Monthly highs, just not October, but the prior 3 months highs, stocking that 150 area, trading up 993, pre-market high. So situations like this, your pre-market high comes in at 152. That would be my ultimate target. The longer it took to get to 152, I think I'd be more looking to bring my offer down 151, 152. Another good strategy on a stock like this, you get that pop. Let's say you open 148.50. And then you run to 150, 150, right? And then all of a sudden you stall and then come back down through the open. That could be a potential shorting opportunity. But big move for McKesson, opening up in the monthly resistance. I haven't looked at a Cardinal Health. Dennis, someone took Cardinal Health. I know if you would have been there, it wouldn't have traded 52.35.
Got silly last night.
Yeah, huge move.
But I mean, the one thing to consider is there is value in these stocks. I mean, it's 3.79% dividend. This was a worry for a long time. So if they get rid of this worry, maybe they continue. But I've just seen, you know, it's kind of like feels like a little bit of the First Solar over again. I mean, First Solar had some decent news and they faded that news because stock's been downtrend. I just think they might come in here and actually be some profit taking into this. And that's why I'm almost tempted. Cardinal Health's been a dog in my portfolio for a while. I mean, I'm basically even on it. I bought it. I can't remember when I bought this, but I've had this for like about a year and a half. And I bought it right around $50. And it's really went up to 57, went down to 43, went back up to 57, down to 42, 43. It's like there's not a lot of growth in it. I know it's a dividend play, and that's the kind of stocks I like. But and I've been getting paid to wait with the 3.7% dividend. But maybe there's better places for
what's it. Going on in the bid offer right there, right now?
On what stock?
Cardinal Health.
50.70 to 50.98.
Okay. Because
bid up at 50.70.
Okay. Because in the last, since 745 here, 50.80 has been the high. Someone is, I know it's not there, but I just on the 15-minute chart, to me, it looks like someone just won. You know, it's just that 90.
Could be an algo there.
Yeah, not, they're showing the 90 offer, but if anything 80 and above comes in, I think they're hitting it. So I got to move that seller out of there. I mean, you could also say there's a buyer at 70, but just looking at this 15-minute chart, to me, it looks like someone's working out of a piece here. At 50.80, I mean, they might have picked it up at 45, 46 bucks, you know, over the last week, and they're like out. Maybe their target was 50, so they're helping, you know, they're happy to get out at 50.80. We mentioned the resistance in McKesson. And then ABC, AmerisourceBergen, correct?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, these stocks have been in the gutter, and now they're ripping here. I mean, you're talking about a stock that's lost, you know, 8 or 9 points over the last 2 months. Now it gets it all back basically in one day. That's why I think there could be profit taking.
On a proposed settlement, right?
Yeah. And they're still going to pay some money. So I don't know. I maybe thought it was they were going to pay a lot more money than this, and that's why they're ripping these things up. I'm not you know, an analyst here to sit here and analyze if this is a settlement good or not. I mean, the market is saying it's the potential settlement is good, and price obviously, you know, talks volumes here. But I just look at all the overhead supply, and I think so many people underwater, even like myself in Cardinal Health, and they're getting a lot of it back here in one day. I think there's people that are going to say thank you.
Johnson & Johnson offered $4 billion in that settlement.
Yeah.
And, they also caught an upgrade here from Atlantic.
135 in J&J. I got to go look at the book here. Maybe JB Speck's going to beat me to it, but I feel like there's something up there. And maybe JB Speck noted that yesterday. I'm going to the book right now, 135. Yeah, 110,000 shares at 135 on J&J. And that's going to be significant here. So can it get through that level? That's, you know, obviously couldn't yesterday on the earnings report. Can it do it on this opioid settlement? Maybe, but that's a big level for it.
Yeah, 134. I was looking at that level yesterday. Yesterday's high, 134 and a quarter. Just keep in mind, you know, this is a really big move for J&J. You're at 128.52 in the middle of last week. And just a quick look at Walgreens Boots Alliance. That's trading up 36 cents. That is not as, you know, directly affected. 56 is a big number in that. CVS has gotten off the mat and then some. That's trading up 32 cents at the highs of the pre-market session. 64.98 was yesterday.
Is there news? We're 40 cents wide on the S&P right now.
We're taking now. Retail sales are out, Dennis.
Holy, this is hard to follow this market.
Big miss on the retail sales here. Awaiting, they are out. They are not good. Nice volatility. U.S. retail sales month over month for September. Down 0.3% versus an up 0.3% estimate. Prior was 0.4%. Retail sales are moving the market. And, you know, we were talking about trying to go green, right? And that little pop there in the S&Ps took you 3 cents shy of that. Your high was 29.97.75. Got to 29.97 before you had to dip. Mid-range on the session comes in at 91.25. Dipped to 89 there. So let's see if we can hold 91.25 going in to the opening bell. Dennis, we got a guest coming on in 4 minutes, but if you need to bolt till then.
Some volatility. We went 40 or 50 cents wide on the SPY on that 830 number. It's amazing how liquidity just evaporates when you have potential fundamental information coming there, because typically SPY is trading with a one penny market right now, or 3 cents. You know, the Arabs usually keep her around 3 cents, but they went 50 cents wide on the SPY ahead of that 830 number.
I've showed these guys here the book, like on the, you know, in the S&Ps and before like a Fed, you know, announcement. Or
oh, something. Yeah, it just goes. It's gone. It goes.
Yeah. Yep. But still down five.
Now we come all the way back up here. Hard market to follow.
Yeah. Down five at 92.75. That little dip there, that little dip was definitely down to 89. So we'll see how that looks up. Stocks pretty much holding steady. Once again, just re-emphasizing that the importance of that pre-market high, 97.75, got to 97 even on this pop. Let's see. We got 3 minutes here before we get our guest.
Jimmy Vegas was saying we had some Brexit news that helped. That was the reason for the little pop.
I did see that.
Saw.
Yep, Brent did get that in there. There was something on Brexit. I believe I saw this at 8:24. UK publication RTE says DUP has accepted latest Brexit proposals. Who knows with that, man? That's just if the trade war and Brexit happened on, and the trade war ended and Brexit went through on the same day.
No idea. Trade war, I think, trumps it all, though.
I just want to touch real quick here. Andrew Left goes bullish on BHC,
sure.
Healthcare. That got a nice spike yesterday. Andrew hasn't been too hot lately. He's had some shorts, I know, and he's been kind of quiet. We'll see how this works out. Trading up 11 cents. I think that it's important that you take out that high from yesterday at 22.04. You backed off to settle 70 cents off that at 21.34. Also, other highs there at 22.25. So there's your major resistance. I also wanted to mention here, real quick, Apple. Now, do you think this is a coincidence or not, Dennis? When I bought my iWatch, Apple the day before closed at 220.82, and it closed at 235.32 yesterday. You think
it's the watch indicator, like the briefcase indicator with Greenspan. We had the watch indicator with Joel. He buys a product, and the stock takes off and knows that revenue's coming in there.
But I will say someone wants out of 238 here. You look at the last three sessions, 37.64, 38.13, and then 37.65 yesterday. Now, we have backed off from that area $3, but if you are looking at a swing short or maybe to look at some, you want another breakout here, something going down to 238 was a laggard in yesterday's market, but I pointed out to somebody, look what it's done over the last couple of weeks. You know, to hardly call it, you know, just because it didn't participate in yesterday's rally, it surely had participated quite a bit before. So
don't call me Shirley.
Okay, that's from Airplane, right? How are we doing, Chris? Do we have okay? So time to time here, yeah, we have a new guest, and we got one I think you guys are really gonna like. It's Tom Boley. He's a chief market strategist at EarningsBeat.com. He is going to share some charts with us. He's going to talk fundamental, Dennis. When I was talking to this guy yesterday, I'm like, am I talking to Dennis here from a fundamental perspective? Do we have you, Tom?
I am here. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. And are we going to get you on video as well?
There I am.
Okay, there he is.
Excellent.
How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well here. Just watching some of the volatility here. What do you got on that hat there? What is that? Baltimore
Ravens? I had to go with the local team, the Carolina Panthers.
The Carolina Panthers. Okay.
So I'm just a little bit south of Charlotte, North Carolina. They're just over the line in South Carolina, so it's more of a Carolina team. But, yeah, I thought I would – I was thinking about – you know, sporting my Virginia Tech colors today, but the season hasn't been so great. I thought I'd do the Panthers instead.
All right. So tell us, you got an interesting background. People come from all, you know, different walks of life here. Tell us, you know, what you were doing originally and kind of how it led you into the markets.
All right. Well, I've been in the markets really since the early 1980s, but I am a CPA. So I was in public accounting for 20 years. Worked in a large regional CPA firm in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland area for those 20 years. And really just got tired of it and had a passion for the market. A good friend of mine was starting a business, and so I joined him. That was Invested Central back in 2004. And the business just evolved, and we eventually changed the name to Earnings Beats because of our product lineup that we started, where we basically, we're not trading any companies unless they had beaten Wall Street estimates on both top and bottom lines. And so it just made sense to change the name to earningsbeats.com, kind of give everybody a little bit of taste of what we were doing. But I was doing that from the time we started Invested Central in 2004 all the way through 2015, had developed a relationship with Stock Charts where I had, this kind of goes back a ways, but 2006, 2007, I was doing a national radio show on the market and trading. And if you've ever tried to do technical analysis on the radio, it's not particularly easy when you start talking about the MACD and the PPO and people's heads probably spinning listening to the radio. But anyhow,
I agree. Dennis and Dennis tells me, you know, about the numbers and stuff, and I think it's really hard. That's why I think it's important to talk to fundamentals. And you are a fundamentalist here. Tell us about your screening process, how many stocks you follow, your time duration. Give us a little introduction into that.
All right. Well, I have what I call a strong earnings chart list. And what I do is I go through and look at just about every earnings report as it comes out. And I'm really just looking for the headline numbers. I'm looking for revenues. I'm looking for earnings per share. To me, it's an evaluation of management. So if management is conservative, I mean, if you notice Apple throughout the years, almost always promises low and then beats. And so I like management teams that do that. I don't like big surprises come earnings time. So I developed a strong earnings chart list where I look for companies that beat top and bottom line, that have liquidity. I want to make sure that they trade enough shares. And then I look at the charts. So the charts are my final yes or no. If I like the way the chart's looking, technically, if it's in an uptrend, volume trends look good to me, then I add it to my list.
Does it just have to be one time that they have to beat on the top and bottom line, or do you wait for one, two, or three consecutive quarters?
It's just one time. I'm a short-term trader, swing trader, and this list is constantly evolving. So as you get close to earnings, I don't like to hold into earnings. So as these companies get close to their earnings reports, they come off my list. And then as they beat, they get re-entered. So some have been on there for the last couple of years if they've continued to beat and they look strong on their charts. But I think in trying to manage risk, I think it's really hard to manage risk when you go into earnings reports, because even some of the strongest looking charts, you know, you've heard that old Wall Street adage, buy on rumor, sell on news. So a lot of times you get a stock that looks really good, comes out with a great report, and then sells off. And usually those sell-offs can be great opportunities.
And so your 90-day duration you're looking at for some of these trades, you get in before the report, and then or get in after the report, trade it before the report, let things shake out here. So you got the controls there, Tom. We tried to hook you up as a panelist here. I know you got a slew of charts here that you'd like to share with us. Show us just one more question before you share the charts. So, like, do you like to chase stocks here? They have good earnings reports and they're trading up huge, and you're out there, you're the momentum guy, you're bidding the high of the day because it's going higher. Is that your method of trading?
No, actually, I don't like to chase. I like to find these companies come out with earnings, and then I add them to my list, you know, the strong earnings companies, and then I wait, and I'll run scans against that list. Right now, you asked me earlier how many are on there. I have about 300 stocks right now on my list. So that's kind of my world in terms of trading. And then I'll run scans against the list. So I'll look for 20-day tests. I'll look maybe for RSIs that come back down between 40 and 50, because a lot of times when you get these stocks that are in nice uptrends, when you do finally get a little bit of a pullback, many times that RSI 40 to 50 level will mark a pretty good opportunity to enter. But I do have a couple charts, and I want to show you one from a really long-term perspective, because even though I'm a short-term trader, I like to trade in the direction of the overall trend. And so I believe we're in a secular bull market. So anybody who is watching this, who is say 40 years old or younger, probably hasn't been too involved in a secular bull market, except for these last few years. But if you watch CNBC, you'd never know you were in a bull market. But can I go ahead and pull that chart up?
Sure. Go ahead. You got to, we tried to give you the controls there to do this. Do you have them?
Yeah. Do you have the screen? It should be up now.
It should just takes a second here. There we go. All right. Yeah. You're on your way.
All right. So this is, I know I said I was short term. This is a 100-year chart. How short term is that? taking a look at this chart though, we go through cycles. The stock market goes through cycles. And if you go back and you look to 30s and 40s, we were in a secular bear market. We broke out. We had a secular bull market for about 18, 19 years. Then we went through a secular bear market again. I do have average returns up here. These are average annual returns during these periods. Of course, the 1980s through the 1990s, we had a huge secular bull market. Again, those 18, 19 years. And then from 2000 to about 2012, we went through what I consider to be another secular bear market. And I know, Dennis, you were talking earlier about the 2007, 2008 decline. And you can see, when we have these big pullbacks, these are not just pullbacks in a secular bear market. These are nasty. Same thing with 70s, back in the 30s and 40s. But we'll have bear markets during secular bull markets, but they're cyclical bear markets. And so you don't see the huge selling during these periods that you do during secular bear markets. When we look back at just the fourth quarter of 2018, that's a little blip on the radar screen. And that's the type of selling that when we get it, that's the type of selling I expect we're going to have. I might be one of the most bullish guests you've had on here. I think the next 10 years, the stock market's going to explode to the upside. And I've got a chart of the treasury yields, and I want to explain a little bit about that, because I think that is where the money is going to rotate from. So if we take a look at the 10-year treasury yield, and if you look back over these last 10 years, this is a 10-year chart. Top of the chart's the S&P 500. Bottom of the chart's the 10-year treasury yield. When the treasury yield is on the rise, generally it coincides with a really nice move in the S&P 500, because you're not just getting new money moving into the S&P, but you're getting a lot of rotation away from the defensive treasuries, and that's what helps to fuel these huge stock market rises. Now, when the 10-year treasury yield is moving lower, most of the time, what you'll see in a secular bull market is consolidation, because every dollar going into the treasuries is a dollar that cannot go into the S&P 500. So when you look back and you look at these periods where we've had these declines, you'll see maybe a little bit of movement to the upside, but not a lot. Down here at the bottom, this is a correlation indicator that's shown over at stock charts. It's the correlation coefficient, which just compares two different symbols. In this case, the S&P 500 and the 10-year Treasury yield. Any reading on here that's above zero means that there's a positive correlation between the two. Any readings below means that there's a negative correlation or an inverse correlation. And you can see going through these last 10 years that for the most part, there's a pretty positive correlation. So that when the yield is rising, it means Treasury prices are falling. And so that money coming out of the Treasuries is rotating into the stock market. If I stretch this back 20 years so that we can then bring in that bear market, that secular bear market, what you'll see is when the 10-year Treasury yield drops, there's no new money coming into the stock market, and all the money coming into the Treasuries is flowing away from the stock market. So you can see the difference between the huge drops in the 10-year Treasury yield and the huge drops in the S&P 500 as compared to now when we get these big drops, the market isn't going down. I think we have a completely different environment. And again, if you're under 40 years old, you're not used to this because you think, oh my gosh, we might go into a recession. And if we go into a recession, then the market's going to drop 50%. Well, if I go back to that S&P 500 chart, there was a recession in 1990 right here. You can barely tell it. It was a blip on the radar screen. There was also a recession in the early 80s. If you go back into the 50s, there were three or four recessions during this period. But the market, it was, you pull back, you sell off, but it's not the same as being in a secular bear market. So for me, one of the big takeaways in the way I approach the stock market is that I believe we are in a longer term move to the upside. And doesn't mean that the S&P couldn't drop a couple hundred points. I mean, we start getting another couple tweets and, you know, the trade war, you know, kicks back into gear, the market gets fearful. Yes, we could drop back down again, there's no doubt. But I think the long-term picture here is very bullish.
Tom, I'm looking at these charts, and this is very interesting, you know, to break it down like this. The one question I have for you is, how do you know, because we've had, you're saying we've been in a secular bull run for the last, it looks like 7 years by your chart. How do you judge how long that secular bull run is going to be? I mean, is there an average length of time you're looking at there? I mean, some of these look like they were for 20 years. Are you looking for another 20-year secular bull run? Is that, and you think we're just like in the like the third inning of this thing? Or, you know, what's to say that maybe the secular bear market doesn't start next week? How do you know when that the secular bull run is going to continue?
Well, I think there are some things that have common characteristics in the secular bear, and you mentioned one of them earlier, Dennis. You were talking about the volatility index back in 2007, 2008,
yep,
when it went up to 90. Mm-hmm. If you go through these secular bear markets, of course, the VIX, I don't have a VIX reading going way back, but during this secular bear market, the volatility index, the difference in the level of panic in the market is completely different. Mm-hmm. When you go through a secular bear market, you can see VIX readings going up to 40, 45, or in that one extreme case, we went up to 90. In a secular bull market, that fear level never quite builds to that level. And if you go back and you look at some of these lows that we've seen, 2015, 2016, 2018, the VIX only gets up to about the mid-30s. And that's been a common characteristic. So I think there are a couple of things that we can look at. To answer your question, I think we're in the third inning. I think that this is a generational type of a bull market, very similar to the 1980s and 90s. Very similar to the 1950s and 60s. You know, we go through a period of 12 years, 10, 12 years, where we go nowhere, even though our economy does grow. It's not like we're in a recession for 10 to 12 years. I think that it's a catch-up. I think that the stock market is going to catch up to all the growth that we had experienced. I think the money rotating, it's hard to argue that we're not going to start to see some money rotating away from treasuries as low as those treasury yields are right now. I mean, maybe we go negative like so many other parts of the world, but I don't think so. I think that we're going to see a little bit more movement to the upside in the yields. I'm not looking for 5-6% in the treasury yield, but if we get the 2.5-3%, that would be a huge amount of money rotating out of treasuries to help fuel this bull market.
I mean, the big, you know, thing here too is where does money go? I mean, when I look at this and, you know, this is would give food for your thesis here. Where does money go? I mean, we've got interest rates are so low. If you're sitting in cash, you're just losing to inflation. I know they say that we don't have inflation, but we know that's not true because if they calculated the way they did 20 years ago, inflation's still running around 6%. And that's the number you got to look at because, you know, there is obviously still inflation here, you know, and through product sizing and everything, they have other ways too. But I'm just saying, where do you go to, you know, keep up with inflation? I mean, if you're looking at 1 or 2% here, you know, even if you went to the 30-year and say you're going to get, you know, upwards of 3% maybe longer term. I mean, it's tough to, you know, it's tough to make money at that. So I just don't know where else money goes. And this is why I think I agree with you. I think, you know, we could eventually see Dow 30,000 or the Dow 50,000 or even potentially Dow 100,000. And maybe it's not as far away as we think.
Yeah, I was looking. I wouldn't be surprised. I was looking at the S&P 500, but I think in 10 years we could be at 7,500.
That would be, yeah, crazy. So that's a significant run. That makes me want, you're making me all bullish here. I want to go out and buy stocks here now. It's the dip. We're down 0.1% here at this point. I want to go buy stocks.
Well, again, short term, I think we could go back to 2,700, 2,750. I don't think we're going back down there. But I think that would still play into the long-term bullishness, and I'd still be okay with it. I think we're going to break out, though. You said earlier you kind of, you know,
it
you
see feels like it to dripping. Me.
Yeah, I see it as well. And you've got a lot of folks that are very nervous and bearish. I want to show you this one last chart, and then I've got to run. Mm-hmm. But this is a chart of this is, again, long-term chart of the S&P 500. Here on the bottom, I have a 12-month rate of change on jobs. So when you look back at all of these moves, I put in these blue X's. These are all recessions. These are, by definition, recessions that hit. And if you look, every one of these saw job growth go negative. All but, well, 1969, I think, was the only one that didn't go negative on job growth. Every other one, we saw this go negative. Now, everybody's screaming about a possible recession. We had a manufacturing report that was showing contraction a week or two ago. Look at where the jobs number is right now. I'm not saying that we can't have one, but based on jobs, I think the economy is stronger than what a lot of folks are saying. And I think that's going to be a catalyst to drive the yields higher and, again, to move that money from treasuries over into equity. So two things that I would watch really closely because I don't have time to go into them now. Maybe I can come back sometime and share these charts. But transports and small caps, those tend to be the groups that really start to cook when the market breaks out and starts running. So I know you said earlier, I heard you say you're not interested in the J.B. Hunt report. That was actually one of the reports I was watching pretty closely. And I'm also watching for Kansas City Southern, which is a railroad reporting on Friday, because if we can get the transports going, I think that would be a confirming signal that we're going higher.
We've been on the line with Tom Boley. He's the chief market strategist at earningsbeats.com. And, based on the responses here from both our chats, you're going to be back on our show sometime soon. Thank you, Tom. Great information, great charts. We'll be back with you real soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. S&P futures still down 6.5, 29.91 and a quarter. So basically, you had the little run up on the Brexit. You had the little dip on the retail sales, and the market is quiet. Dennis, did you like that?
Yeah, I like taking back and doing, you know, this makes me feel more comfortable with my long-term portfolio because, you know, I've been frustrated with the long-term portfolio, and maybe it's because we haven't gone anywhere for 2 years. And I look at my long-term investments and think, man, they're not doing anything. I'm at the same spot I was 2 years ago. The only reason I have a little bit more money is because I'm making trading money. I'm throwing more money into it. But, I mean, really, you know, when you own 100 stocks like I do, you're really going to do what the S&P is really kind of doing. And if you look here, if we just go back and look at our monthly charts, I mean, we're at S&P, well, I guess, you know, we're up slightly here, 293 on the SPY a year ago. And if you go back a little further, beginning of 2018, we got to 286. I mean, really, we're talking about the market being up 2 or 3% in the last couple of years. It hasn't, you know, and obviously if you're looking, you know, depending on when you timed it too, I mean, there's obviously points in time. If you bought it lower, you know, on the dip at the beginning of 2019, you'd be better off. But just looking overall, it's really gone nowhere for 2 years. Maybe we're just gearing up for this next big bull run here, like Tom thinks. I mean, there's a good argument. Where does money go? You know, if you're looking at where you want to put money, and, you know, some people believe it's all going to go to cryptocurrency, and some people believe it's still going to go back into gold, but I mean, the stock market has been one of the better performers, at least if you're looking out for this last 7 or 8 years. And over time, I feel like with interest rates so low, I just can't see stocks getting smacked.
Yep. No, it was that was good information there. So we got we had some other earnings reports. We had Comerica, Punk, Abbott. Are you interested?
Lots of ratings too. I mean, I'm interested in Abbott Labs. I own Abbott Labs, my long-term portfolio. It is getting hit here this morning, down $3. So again, my long-term portfolio continues to be punished. Maybe it's selective perception. I guess I own NVIDIA and that was okay. But Abbott Labs here, down $3. I mean, you're coming back into support here. I don't know. I've been in the stock forever. I'm probably sticking with it. I've had it for a decade, so I don't see any reason to sell.
When they went that 84 dip to 7, did they buy somebody there? I'm trying to think. Or was that just Mark? No.
Abby obviously had the big, you know.
Yeah, no, that's not it. Okay, well, you got it. This is a big.
Abby had the Allergan purchase, and that's why. Obviously, Abby had the huge fall. If you go back and look at back to June of this year, that's what the big fall would be. But I always put those two stocks together because Abby obviously came from Abbott Labs.
And who bought Oxy? Who was the one that got pounded on that?
They bought APA. Oxy bought APA and Oxy got pounded. Anadarko, which is off the board now. That merger did go through.
They got Carl in here. They got Warren in here.
They paid too much. I mean, they came in, they paid a premium for a petroleum company in an environment where they're selling the hell out of petroleum companies. It was a ridiculous premium. I mean, if you look at what Anadarko got, I mean, shareholders made out like bandits on that. And Chevron, the best thing they did was lose that bid because the stock has obviously held up a lot better than Oxy. Oxy was trading when this merger and they obviously won the bid, it was around $70, $67, I believe it was. And, you know, ended up, and now it's up 40. So a lot to do with oil. Oil hasn't done great either. But really, if you look at oil over that same period of time, oil really hasn't gone down that much. So almost at the same spot. So, and you look at some of the other oil stocks, yeah, they've kind of all been in the gutter to a certain extent. So it's probably an argument that Oxy would have been down no matter what. But I think it went down a lot more because of that Anadarko purchase.
All right. We've covered the cloud stocks. We've talked a little Apple. Earnings after the close. Let's just take a look at a chart, a couple of these. IBM, Itsy Bitsy Machinery. I don't know. I mean, what chart?
Is this really a stock? Like, okay, let's think about this. And maybe this is a stock that's going to come back. It's a value stock. It's got the 4.54% year. But if you believe, you know, in Tom's theory that we're going into this, where we're going to continue the secular bull market that we've had for the last 7 years, and this could go on for another 7 years, is this the kind of stock that is going to lead the charge? IBM, General Electric, Ford. Do you think these are stocks that are going to lead the charge? No. These aren't the stocks that are going to lead the charge. Maybe it's the cloud stocks. You know, maybe you look at those and say on the pullbacks. But, you know, there's other stocks that could lead the charge too. Could Apple be one of them? Absolutely. Could we go back to FANG? Could the Facebooks and the Googles lead the charge? I mean, it's value, it's growth at a reasonable price, so it's possible. But, you know, there's also going to be other sectors that are going to lead the charge too. But so I don't know which stocks are going to lead us out. I just believe it's not going to be a stock like IBM.
Yeah. Well, it's underperformed the entire time.
It's underperformed forever. I mean, you've had a lot of other companies that have reinvented themselves and figured it out. And IBM has been a dog. You know, go back to the monthlies. Look at the last 7 years in IBM and think about, you know, what the S&P has done. So S&P, the SPY, has doubled in the last 6 years. IBM, in that same time frame, it was 200, has fallen about 30%. So it's just an awful performance relative to where other stocks have went. And why bet on a loser? You know, why do you want to bet on the long shot? Why do you want to bet on the loser? Are they going to turn it around? They potentially could, but I think there's a better chance of companies, you know, that are going to be, you know, operating already well. Why not bet on the winners? So I don't want to bet on IBM that's been a perennial loser. I tried to bet on IBM. I put in the long-term portfolio for a bit there when the whole blockchain thing was happening. And I thought maybe this could be, you know, one of the big winners and this would bring them back and help for a little bit. But then blockchain obviously fell off and IBM, you know, never was a serious revenue maker for them anyways. It never was going to be. So I just can't get betting on IBM. Could they have a good earnings report tonight? Sure. Could they pop? Sure. But is this the stock that I want my long-term portfolio that's going to lead the charge in the next secular bull market? No.
What about the Red Hat purchase?
I mean, they try, but this goes to show you they're so desperate. They had to overpay for Red Hat, and they're desperate to buy growth because they can't internally generate it. So when you got to go out and you got to buy the growth, you know, at ridiculous valuations, like in the Red Hat case, that's scary. So, I mean, some companies have figured it out. Think about Microsoft. in the same period. You could have said in 2012, and you know, IBM and Microsoft, similar businesses, you know, PC, we were looking at back then, obviously, you know, as you know, operating system. Microsoft totally reinvented themselves. They went cloud, they went, you know, gaming, they went all these other things to turn this company around. What did IBM do? They didn't do any of that stuff, and that's why the stock's still in the gutter. So here's my rant against IBM. Can it rally on the report? Yeah, you know, market could help it too. I mean, maybe we'd be up and IBM will rally on that. But I just think, wow, you know, they've really lagged the market. And why does that change over the next 7 years?
I have to agree with you. All right, we're going to wrap things up today. And the market's pretty much where it was when we started. S&Ps are down 575 here at 29.92. Going to overemphasize there that that pre-market high at 97.75, getting over that would get us a green on the session. And then yesterday's high could be your next target there at 03.25. I just want to mention that tomorrow's guest will be Mark Chaykin of Chaykin Analytics. He joins the show every couple weeks to give us updates on the Chaykin money flow. Also, it mentioned at the top of the show, this show is sponsored by Webull. Make sure you go get the Webull mobile app and enter that trading competition. And also, for anybody out in Chicago or anybody interested in attending the Benzinga Cannabis Conference next week, use the code BZFAN, and you can get a discount price there. I'll drop the link here again in the chat. Also tomorrow, we will be joined by Spencer Israel, who will be returning from Austin, Texas. So we'll get Spencer back here. Let's big thanks to Chris for helping us out over the last three days. Things went great. So wrapping things up on this Wednesday, have a great day. We will be back with you tomorrow morning.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.